Brachos Daf Yud Ches. We begin the new perek on the bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Beis. A couple words of introduction before we begin the actual perek. Number one, the placement of the perek. So we obviously find this perek to be the third perek immediately following the second perek. There is a Tosus over here in the beginning, very in the beginning of the perek, Tosus of Dibra Maschol Misha Mesa Mutal Funav. And Tosus quotes a Rashi that says that the perek of Misha Mesa is after the perek of Tfilas HaShachar, meaning that the Tfilas HaShachar, which is found in our fourth perek, is really the third parak, and that means that this parak is the fourth parak. But Tosus immediately says that he doesn't agree. Aval nira l'rishu achar hayakore. Da'ari b'sefer mikriyashma v'kam maskel nami b'tur kriyashma u'vishal migaris kain kamokain. So Tosus points out that the parak really does belong as the third parak, meaning it immediately follows the second parak. Why? Because in the first two parakim we've been dealing with the halachas of kriyashma. First parak talked about masai, when. Second parak really dealt with how to actually say the Kriya Shema. And at the end of the second parak, we talked about the Peturim, those people who are exempt from Kriya Shema. If you take a look at the Mishnah on Tazayin Amud Beis, so the Mishnah over there talked about the Chassan who was Patur from Kriya Shema. So our Mishnah is going to continue the discussion of who's going to be Patur. So therefore, Tosfos says that this is a Hamshacha, the continuation of the second parak, where it continues giving us the Peturim, those people who are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. That's one word of introduction. A second word of introduction. Rachmanis, somebody loses a loved one, one of the seven krovim, seven relatives, where someone has to be an avel, is going to be over his mother and his father, his brother and his unmarried sister, his son or his daughter, or his spouse, his wife. Under those circumstances, the person now is an avel. When a person's an avel, so they break up avelus into two stages. One is what's called aninus, or an onain, and the second is avelus. Onain is a period of time from the misa, from the death, until the kfur, until the burial. After the burial, the person then moves from being an onain to being an avel. As we're going to learn together over the course of this daf, an onain is patur min mitzvos, he's going to be exempt from mitzvos, and we'll discuss why over the course of this parak. And so it's important to realize that there's a stage of what's called aninus, and there's a stage called avelus. And they are halachically two different stages. An onan, as we already pointed out, is patur min mitzvos. He's going to be exempt from performing mitzvos, just to be clear. He's exempt from doing positive commandments. However, the onan is still going to have to abide by all the negative prohibitions of the Torah. Once you enter into the stage of avela, so obviously there's a mitzvah to mourn, but in terms of the obligation, a person during avela is obligated all the mitzvos of the Torah. Recently we discussed in the second parak that the avel is going to be patur from putting on tefillin, but as we already pointed out, that's only on the first day, and that's because of the idea of having a pe'er, a crown upon his head, in which an avel for that first day is not to have a crown on his head, so therefore he's going to be exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin, but that's only for the first day. But short of that, he's chayav in all the other mitzvahs of the Torah. With that stated, we now begin the third parak. We're on the bottom of Yizayin Amud Beis, Misha Mesa Mutal Afanav. So the person has his dead immediately in front of him, meaning it's one of the seven krovim, and he has an obligation to bury, and the simple reading of the Mishnah is that the mace is right in front of him. The Gemara is going to spend some time with that, so we're going to come back to that. So, such an individual now, who we now have the terminology, so we're going to describe him as an onay. Patur mikriya shma, he's going to be exempt from the mitzvah of kriya shma, umina tefillah. Now the Bach takes out the words min tefillah, because we're not really focusing on davening over here, and davening is coming up later. And davening is not a mitzvah min Torah, although as we'll see in tomorrow's daf, that what I just said is a controversial statement. But anyway, the Bach takes out the word min tefillah, umin tefillah, and he's going to be exempt from tefillin, because again, he's an onein, he's exempt from mitzvos. Now the next words of the Mishnah is mikol mitzvos amrus b'Torah, and from all mitzvos of the Torah. Now that's a strange line of the Mishnah, because if that's true, so then the Mishnah could just simply said kol mitzvos amrus b'Torah, and we would have known then that they'd be exempt from kriyashma and from tefillin. There are some Rishonim who take out the words mikol mitzvos amrus b'Torah, and the Mishnah over here is just focusing on kriyashma and from tefillin. But who adin? An onin is in fact exempt from all mitzvos of the Torah in any regard. So the Mishnah first informs us that a person who has a mace and has to bury the mace, and he's in status of an onin, so he's going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Kriya Shema and from tefillin and from all mitzvahs of the Torah. Notice the Amita, the Mishnah then talks about the people who are carrying the bier, carrying the coffin. V'chulufeim v'chulufei chulufeim. And anybody who is going to be taking a turn. Eshel lefnei Amita v'eshel acher Amita. The Mishnah breaks it up into two different types of two categories. One is the one who is in front of the coffin and the one that is after the coffin. Meaning that the procession of the coffin being taken out to the cemetery plot is that it's going to be handed from one person to another. And that everyone's going to have ishtatfas, everyone's going to have participation in the mitzvah of burial. Eshel lefnei amita, tzorach mehem peturim. So the Mishnah says that those who are awaiting the coffin, and that means that they're going to be handling the coffin, which means that they're going to be doing the mitzvah of kvura, so therefore they're going to be exempt from doing the mitzvah of shema. Ve'eshel achar mita. Now those who already have taken the coffin, meaning that they're already now behind the coffin, tzorach mehem chayavin. Now the Mishnah has a funny language. The Mishnah says tzorach mehem, even if they're needed, chayavin, they're going to be obligated in shema. Now what does that mean, even if they're needed? If they were already handed the coffin and now they're behind the coffin, so what does that mean they're needed? So the way Rashi understands it, and I'm reading the Rashi inside, Shalachar Amita, Af im tzorech bahem, even if they're ended up needing, meaning that there's just not enough people over there and they're probably going to be used again, but hoel shekvar yatsu yidei chovasim min ameis, but since they already carry the coffin, so at that point in time, they're going to be exempt from the mitzvah shema. That's how Rashi reads the Mishnah. Ve'elu ve'elu p'turim min ha'tfilah. Now, in both cases, they're going to be exempt from tefillah, from davening. So the Mishnah over here introduces us to the idea that although we're going to make a distinction between the people in front of the coffin and behind the coffin vis-a-vis shema, but vis-a-vis davening, everyone's going to be exempt from davening. Why? Why should everyone be exempt from davening? So take a look at Rashi over here, where Rashi quotes two pshatim. The first pshat that's quoted by Rashi is alav daraisahi, because tefillah is not a din daraisa, it's a din darabanan. And so therefore an exemption is given even for those people who already took the coffin. Rabbi Sander Pirsha Rashi quotes another pshat, lefi sheyesh lahem od shahos. Well, there's more time later in the day. We saw Rashi earlier in the second parak that talked about how the Zman Tefillah is actually the entire day, which, as we already pointed out, that's a strange Rashi because there are Zmani Tefillahs. We're going to learn together in the fourth parak. But Rashi doesn't like this language because the Mishnah says the word pater. Pater means there's an exemption from the mitzvah of tefillah, and so therefore exemption seems to indicate that they don't have any obligation whatsoever. And Rashi prefers his first pshat that it's a din derabanan. Continuing in the Mishnah, kavrus ameis, if they bury the body v'chazru and they're returning in michol mahaskav ligmar ashelo yagil ushura. Now, in order to understand this next part of the Mishnah, so we're going to go over a custom that's practiced till this very day. After the burial, so what you do is you form a line. You form a line where the Avelim now are going to be walking through the lines and everyone's going to extend for the first time Divrei Tanchumim, words of comfort. So they're returning now to the line and there's going to be a little bit of time now where they're going to be standing on the line, but the Avel has not yet passed them. The Mishnah tells us that if there is time for them to finish, so then Yaschilu, so then they should start the Shema because they will have time to finish. The Imlav lo Yaschilu, but otherwise they should not start the Shema. And then the Mishnah makes a distinction whether you're in the inside of the line versus the outside of the line. And presumably what the Mishnah means by that is that if you're on the inside of the line, so that means that you're literally going to have a front seat to extending Tanchumim, and therefore you're going to be involved in the mitzvah of Nicham Avelim, and so therefore you're going to be exempt from saying the Shema, but the people who are in the back rows, so they are not going to actively be involved in the mitzvah of Nicham Avelim, and so therefore they're not going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Shema. Now there's another line in the Mishnah, but that's coming up later, and it really belongs at a later point in the parak, so we're going to immediately go to the Gemara. The Gemara starts off, mutal afan of in, v'sheina mutal afan of lo. If the mace is directly in front of him, so then he's going to be exempt, but if the mace is not directly in front of him, so then he's not going to be exempt. Meaning, what the Gemara is doing at this point in time is taking a very literal read of the Mishnah. The Mishnah starts off by saying, misha mesa mutal lafan of. Well, not only is an owning, but the dead body happens to be directly in front of him. And a careful and very deliberate reading of the Mishnah would seem to indicate that only under those circumstances there's going to be an exemption from Shema. But if the mace is not directly in front of him, even though he's an Onain, so it would seem to read that he would be obligated in the Shema very minimum. And the Gemara is going to point out that doesn't go well with what we know otherwise. The Gemara is going to quote a Mishnah in Moed Katan. The Mishnah in Moed Katan reads, Misha mesa mutal afan of, if somebody has a mace in front of them, ochel b'bayis echad. So, if the and they're eating in the same house, Oklin bebais acher, should be eating in another house. You shouldn't be eating in the same house as the actual mace itself. Rashi points out over here, nira kalogra larash, it looks like you are mocking and ridiculing somebody who's poor, meaning that the mace obviously is not in a position where they can eat, and so therefore it's a function of loig larash, you're mocking the dead. An interesting Rashi, because generally speaking, Loig L'Rush we describe as terms of you shouldn't be doing mitzvahs in front of a mace, because a mace obviously can't do mitzvahs, and if you're doing mitzvahs in front of the mace, so you're mocking, you're ridiculing the mace for his inability to perform mitzvahs. So maybe that's why Rashi writes it's Nirek Loig L'Rush, it looks like you're Loig L'Rush. Either way, so you should be eating in another house. So, but let's say you don't have another house, ochel bebeis chaver, so you should go to your friend's house. V'im ein lo bebeis chaver, now if you don't have a friend's house to currently eat in, ose mechitza v'ochel. So you should make a wall, a partition separating you and the mace. V'im ein lo davar lasos mechitza. Now if that's unavailable, mach zir panov v'ochel. So what you're going to do is you're going to turn your face from the mace and then you're going to eat. V'eino mesiv. You're not going to recline. V'ochel. V'eino ochel basar v'eino shosa yayin. As an onan, you're not allowed to eat meat and drink wine. V'eino mevarech v'eino mezamin. Eino mevarech, Rashi says, we're talking about, that's referring to the bracha we showed on the amotzi. Eino mezamin, you don't bench, Rashi says. Eino tzarech levarech b'rechaz mazon. And there's no need to bench as well. I'm going to come back to that language of Rashi of eino tzarech levarech. You don't need to bench. And we'll be medayik in that Rashi in just a moment. Continuing in the Gemara, however, finishing up this Mishnah Moin Katan, as we now turn to the top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph, Ein Mevarchen Alav, Ein Mizamnin Alav. Nobody needs to make a bracha on his behalf. No one needs to bench on his behalf. Upatam Ekriya Shema Min HaTfila Min HaTfilin. And he's going to be exempt from Shema, from Tfilin. We call Mitzvah Samurz B'Torah, and from all the Mitzvahs of the Torah. Uvi Shabbos, now on Shabbos, where he is not able to do anything on Shabbos in terms of the burial. So Mesa va'ochel, so you can recline and eat. Basar v'shosa yayin, eat meat and drink wine. Mevarech u'mezamin, and you can make a bracha v'shona and you bench. U'mevarech u'nalav, u'mezamin u'nalav. And others can make the hamotzi for you, others can bench for you. V'chai b'chol mitzvos hamors b'torah. And you're going to be obligated in all the mitzvos of the Torah. And Rashi ben Gamliel, omer mitoch sh'nischai be'el and nischai b'kulan. Well, once you're obligated in these, you're obligated in everything. And v'amar Rav Yochanan, now that last line of Rashi ben Gamliel, it's a little bit difficult to understand, meaning obviously you're going to be obligated in everything. We just learned together that according to the Tanakhama on Shabbos, you're obligated in everything. What did Rav Shimon Gamliel add? So my Beinai, so Rav Yochanan explains that there's a subtle difference between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel, and that's Tashmi Shemitah Ika Beinai. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, Shabbos for the Onain has no status whatsoever. He's not an Onain at all. He has no Nihuge Aninas. And so therefore, on that Shabbos, not only does he behave like a regular Bar Chiyuv, but even to the extent where he's even going to be able to have Tashmi Shemitah with his wife, because on over Shabbos he's not an Onin Bechlal. Mashenkin, according to the Tanakhama, so he will bench and make motzi and recline and eat meat and drink wine, but Tashmi Shemitah, which is Dvarim Shabbat Sinah, so that he's not going to behave on Shabbos. Ketani Mia, the Gemara now points to the discrepancy between our Mishnah here in Brachos and the Mishnah Moin Katan. Patamei Kriyas Shema Min HaTfilah Min HaTfilin, Mikol Mitzvos Amurz B'Torah. The Mishnah Moed Katan says that you're going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Shema, and from Tefillah, and from Tefillin, and from all mitzvahs of the Torah. Now, the Mishnah Moed Katan give us a number of scenarios, including where you're in different houses, you're in your friend's house, or you're in the same house and you put up a partition. In all those circumstances, you're going to be exempt. That seemingly goes against our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says that the exemption only exists when you're directly in front of the mace. So, Amar Rav Papa. So the Gemara is going to give two answers to this question. One is going to be a technical answer, and the one will be slightly more fundamental. The first answer of Rav Papa's answer is technical. Tirgama amach zir panav ochel. Well, you could say that the Mishnah Moed Katan that gives an exemption is only giving an exemption when you're directly in front of the mace. It's not a simple way to read the Mishnah Moed Katan, but you could read it that way. And then our Mishnah here in Brachos would coordinate with the Mishnah Moed Katan, where the exemption only exists when you're directly in front of the mace. Rav Ashi, however, is going to give a more fundamental answer, and that is Kevin She Mutol Alav Lekovro Kemutol Afan of Dami. Once you have the responsibility to bury the mace, so then it's always as if the mace is directly in front of you. Meaning, when you read our Mishnah here in Brachos, don't read it so critically. The Mishnah does use the language of Misha Mesa Mutam Alav Afan of, but it does not mean that the mace is directly in front of you. It just simply means that you have the responsibility of burying the mace. And that still qualifies as meso mutalafanov. And he offers a proof that this is in fact so. Shenemar, the quotes the pasuk from Parshat Chayisara, Vayakam Avraham me'al penei meso. So first Avraham walks away from Sarah, and he obviously still has a responsibility to bury her. V'nemar ve'ekberei mesi milafanai. And the pasuk goes on to describe that he's going to bury the dead right from in front of him. And Kozman Shemut Alav Lekovro Kemut Alafan of Dummy. And as long as the mace is directly, as long as the responsibility to bury the dead, it's as if the mace is directly in front of him. Good. So, and that means now that our Mishnah over here is saying the exact same thing as the Mishnah Moed Katan, as long as you have the responsibility to bury, so then you're going to be exempt from Shema and from all the other mitzvahs of the Torah. begs the question, why exactly is an onan going to be exempt from the Shema and from all the mitzvahs of the Torah? So you take a look at all the Rashi all the way at the beginning of the perek, and you look at the first Rashi. So he writes as follows. Rashi, going back to the very beginning of the Mishnah, he writes, I'm reading the Rashi, inside lefishu tarud b'machshavas kvuroso, v'avidumia dechasan depata mishum tirda de mitzvah. Now, so Rashi writes over here that this follows the exact same pattern as the chasan. Chasan is tarud b'mitzvah. The chasan is not actively involved in doing the mitzvah right now, but because of the attention that he has towards the mitzvah that he's going to be performing later that evening, so therefore he's in a status of what's called tarud b'mitzvah, and so therefore that tirda creates an exemption from doing the mitzvah. Similarly, says Rashi, the same thing when the person has a responsibility of burial. So for that person who has that responsibility, so therefore his mind is tarud, and he won't have the necessary kavana. So Rashi over here writes it as a function of tirda b'mitzvah. It's interesting because, as we already pointed out, Tosfos in the very beginning of the perek said that Rashi says that this perek belongs not as the third perek, but rather as the fourth perek. It's really interesting because the very first Rashi over here says that this Mishnah is working with the same operating system as the Chasan, which was the very previous Mishnah. So it certainly sounds like from the first Rashi that Rashi does in fact agree that our perek belongs immediately after the second perek, even though Tosfos claims that according to Rashi it belongs to perek later. Okay, but be that as it may, that's Rashi. If you look at Tosfos over here, Tosfos starts on the very bottom of Design and Beis and goes well into Yud Ches Amud Aleph. So Tosfos says that no, it's not a function of Tirda, but rather what is it a function of? So he quotes the Yerushalmi. Now the Yerushalmi says in one of two ways. One, the Yerushalmi says, if you take a look at Tosfos on the very bottom of the previous Amud, Kach Nir Lomer, Einu Mavarech, Einu Rishay Lavarech, Mefarsh B'Yerushalmi Lama, V'Kamer Mimnei Kvodus Shal Meis. So one possibility is because it's not covered for the mace. Where right now there's a mace to be buried, and now you're going to be engaged in mitzvos, and it's just simply not honor to the mace to go ahead and do mitzvos while there is a mitzvah to bury the mace. Inami, Tosfos also says, Mipnei she'ein lo mi she'yisa mas'o. Also, you're actively involved in doing the kvura. And because of your active involvement, so therefore you're going to be exempt because you're osek b'mitzvah. Now that's not like Rashi. Rashi talks about tirda, and Tosfos over here, according to Yerushalmi, says that you're actually being osek b'mitzvah. Now, it could very well be that this discrepancy between Rashi and Tosfos in terms of why it is that you are, that an onin is going to be putter from Kriya Shema, according to Rashi, it's tirda, according to Tosfos, according to Yerushalmi, it's either because of kavod or because he is currently being osik b'mitzvah, so it could fit in well to another basic machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi, on numerous occasions, says that this exemption is not a absolute exemption. You can see the Rashi, Devar Maskal Einu Bavarich, Rashi says, it's on the very bottom of Yuzan and Beis, Rashi says, Einu Tzarech Levarach Birchaz HaMotzi, he doesn't have to make a motzi, which a simple reading of the Rashi wouldn't mean, but he could make a motzi if he wanted to. Also, Rashi says, Einu Mazamin, look at the next Rashi, Einu Tzarech Levarach Birchaz HaMotzi, he doesn't have to bench. What it means to say, but if he wants to, he could bench. Now, Rashi Lashitasa, because Rashi says that this is all a function of Tirda, meaning you're preoccupied, but if your preoccupation is such where you feel that you are not so preoccupied and you feel like you could make a motzi and you could bench, so you should do so. Whereas according to Tosfos brings it down either as a function of kavanah meis or because you are currently being osek in the mitzvah. So Tosfos looks at this patur as a fundamental patur, meaning that you are exempt. You don't have an option. You can't say Shema and you can't do any of the mitzvahs. Tosfos says it very clearly in the beginning, where he says, he quotes the Rashi, Mashma mitok perusha shim ratzal avarech rashai, miyo biyushami kamar, im ratzal ahachmer in shomim lo. So clearly Tosfos is operating that you're not allowed to do it. So the machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos in terms of why you're going to be exempt could also fit into the machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos in terms of whether this exemption is volitional exemption or it's an absolute exemption. Where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So we learned together that a person who is an onan and has a responsibility of burying one of his krovim, so he's going to be exempt from Shema. And the Gemara noted that there seems to be discrepancy between our Mishnah and the Mishnah Malikatan, and either you're going to go with Rav Papa, where you're going to read our Mishnah literally, and you fit the Mishnah Malikatan with our Mishnah, or like Rav Ashi, where you're not going to read our Mishnah literally. Misha Meso just simply means that you're responsible, and once you're responsible, so therefore you're going to be Pater, and now our Mishnah here in Brachos is going to fit in well with the Mishnah in Moikad. Either way, so we have learned together that a Onain is going to be exempt from the mitzvos of Shema and from all the other mitzvos of the Torah. We now turn back to our Gemara when Yud Ches Amud Aleph Meso In, We are about 15 to 20 lines from the top of the Amud, the second word in the line, Meso in Aval Mishamar Lo. Now, if you are involved in the Kvura, so you're going to be exempt. What if you're a Shomer? Vatanya, now it seems like if you're a Shomer, you're going to be obligated. Vatanya, but the Gemara quotes the following Braisa, Mishamar Sa Meso, somebody who's guarding the Meso, a Pishenu Meso, even if it's not his Meso, so he has an exemption from Shema, from Tefillin, and from all the mitzvahs of the Torah. Mishamra of Apishenu Meso, Meso of Apishenu Mishamra. Now, either one would serve as an exemption, meaning if you're involved actively in Shmira, even though it's not your mace, or if it's your mace, but you're not actively involved in Shmira, so the Braisa says you're going to be exempt. So the Gemara, therefore, now adds to the list of exemption, Meso or Mishamra, in. So now, good. So we can say that if it's your mace, you're exempt. If we could say that even if it's not your mace, but you're right now currently involved in Shmira, you're also going to be exempt. But what if you're just walking through the cemetery? So it would sound like we don't have an exemption for such an individual, but the Gemara quotes another braisa. A person should not be walking through a cemetery with tefillin on your head and a sefer Torah in your arms, v'kore, and reading the sefer Torah, v'imosekein over mishum log l'rash chayrif oseihu. And by doing so, if you were to do so, so you're now in violation of log l'rash. You are mocking the mace because the mace can't do the mitzvahs, and you're there wearing tefillin, and you're there reading a sefer Torah, learning Torah. So that seems to indicate that we have now a third exemption, not just mishum muta l'fanav, not just being actively involved in Shemir, but just walking through the cemetery. So the Gemara qualifies this as well. Hasam toch arba amos. If you're within arba amos of the mesa, then you have the issue of log l'rash, and therefore you should not be engaged in mitzvahs while within 4 amos of the mesa. Hu da'aser chutz arba amos, but if you're outside 4 amos, chayev. Then you're going to be chayev, damer mar, mes tofis dal amos, the kriyashma, hacha chutz adamas nami pater. So we learned, and Gemara's quoting a Gemara in Sota, that the mace is going to be acquiring the Dal Amos around him, so that means to say that when you're within the proximity of Dal Amos, so one is not allowed to say Shema. In total, we have 3 exemptions. 1, Misha Mesa Muta Lefanov, when you have the responsibility of burial. 2, when you're actively involved in Shmira, even though it's not your mace. And 3, just being within the proximity of 4 Amos of a mace, so for those 3 people, they have an exemption of saying Shema. Gemara continues now, we're halfway down in the Amud on Yud Ches Med Alef Gufa. Mishamar Sameis, Av Pishayin Ameis, Opatu Mikriya Shema, Minatfilin, Mikol Mitzvah, Samurus Betorah. So the Gemara goes back to the Shmira. Hayu Shnaim Zemishamar Vizekoreh, Vizemishamar Vizekoreh. So let's say there are 2 people there, so they can alternate. One person will do the Shmira, and the other person will say Kriya Shema, and then they'll alternate jobs. Benaze Omer, Hayu Baim Bisvina, if they're coming on a boat, Minichu Bizavizu, Mitzpal Mishnaim Bizavis Acheres. While on a boat, so they don't have to alternate, the 2 of them can say the Shema just in a different corner of the boat. My Benayu, the Gemara wants to know what's the difference between the Tanakhama and Benazai. Tanakhama seems to be arguing with Benazai. I'm Ravina, Choshin Lachbar, Mika Benayu, Marsava Choshin, Marsava Lo Chayshinan. Gemara says the difference between the Tanakhama and Benazai is there a concern of rats and rodents. The entire purpose of Shmira is to make sure that the mace will be preserved and will not be attacked by rats and it'll be a violation of Nivel HaMeis. It'll be a lack of respect for the mace. So that's true if you are on land, but if you're on a boat, so the machlokes between Benazai and the Tanakhama is there such a concern for rats while on a boat? Tanakhama says that there is still a concern, and Benazai says on a boat there is no concern. Again, a difficult machlokes to understand is machlokes metzius. On a boat there are rats, there are no rats. So a little bit difficult to understand the Nekuda Machlokas between the Tanakhama and Benazai, but the Gemara says that's really at the core of the Machlokas. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara continues now. If you have to carry bones from one location to another, person shouldn't put the bones in a sack, sit on top of the bones while riding on the donkey, because that's obviously a lack of respect for the bones. If, however, you're concerned about the non-Jews, and so therefore you want a proper shmira on the bones, or we may list them, or because of bandits, mutter. So under those circumstances, because of the concern you have, and because of the shmira that you want to do with the bones, so therefore you are in fact allowed to put them in a sack, sit on top of them on the donkey, in order to make sure that they will not be taken. And the same thing is true regarding a sefer Torah as well. Now, what's also true regarding a Sefer Torah? So, ahai hilei mareisha pshita. Now, if we're talking about the reisha, so that's obvious. Mi gara Sefer Torah mi atzamos, meaning if by the atzamos you're not allowed to put them in a sack and sit on top of them. So, certainly that's true by Sefer Torah as well. I wouldn't need the brisa to teach me that point. Ela seifa. But rather, it's talking about a case where you are concerned for the safekeeping of the Sefer Torah. So, just like there's a heter by the bones, that one is allowed to put them in a sack and sit on top of the bones. So the same thing is true regarding a Sefer Torah. If you're worried about the shmir of a Sefer Torah, so then under those circumstances, to guard, properly guard the Sefer Torah, one is allowed to put the Sefer Torah in a bag and actually sit on the Sefer Torah when transporting the Sefer Torah in order to make sure that there will be a shmir of the Sefer Torah. Amar Rachva, Amar Rav Yehuda, Kol Aroa, Ameis Ve'enam Ala Vehu, Over Mishum Log L'Rash Chayr Fosehu. If a person sees a mace and does not take the opportunity to do the mitzvah of Levayas Ameis, escorting the body, so then that is also going to be a function of Loig L'Rash. V'imil Val Mascharo. Now, if you do go ahead and escort the mace, so what's on the positive side? I'm Rav Asi, Alav HaKasav Omer, Mav HaShem Chonin Dal. So for that, you'll be fulfilling the Pasuk. The Pasuk says that your Mav HaShem, that when you lend it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chonin Dal, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be showing favor to the poor. Meaning that when you lend, so you become, so to say, almost like a creditor, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to say, owes you. So if you're Malva Hashem, if you lend to Kadosh Baruch Hu, how do you lend to Kadosh Baruch Hu? By being Malave, and it's a play on the word Malve. Meaning Malve over here is, in a simple pshat, meaning a lender, but in the Drasha, it means that you're being Malave. So once you're being Malave, so Chonin Dal, Umechabdo Chonin Avyon. So Kadosh Baruch Hu will give you the honor for having honored the mace. We are now starting a very long section of the Gemara, beginning with the words Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yochanan, where the Gemara is going to be going through the question of what is the mace actually aware of in terms of what's happening in this world. The Gemara starts off, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonasan have a shakli v'azal bebeis ha'klaros. Both Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonasan were going through a cemetery, have a kashaja tchilta to Rabbi Yonasan. And the tzitzis of Rabbi Yonasan was out, and Amalei Rabbi Chiya Dalia. And Rabbi Chiya says, tuck them in. Because the mace is going to be saying to themselves, you know, eventually we're going to be joined by them. And now, at this point in time, they're making fun of us by wearing tzitzis and wearing the tzitzis out. Amalei Miyad Dekulahai. Now, does the mace know this? Does the mace have an awareness of what's going on around them in this world while they are on the other side? So the Gemara says Vaksiv, and now the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Kohelis. Vahamesim enam yodim mu'uma. Mesim don't know anything. And so it would indicate that the mace doesn't know what's going on. So even though if we're wearing tzitzis in the basic varos, so what? They don't know what's going on. So Amarle, so he said back to him, Im Karisa Lo Shanisa. If you learned, so you didn't review, you're learning Im Shanisa Lo Shalishta. And if you reviewed it, you didn't go over it a third time. Im Shalishta Lo Pirshulacha. And even if you went over it three times, no one explained to you Pshat. The Pasuk says, Ki'achayim yodim shiyamosu. Regarding the Chayim, they know shiyamosu. Eilu ha-tzadikim shebemisesam. That is a reference to tzadikim, or even after they're dead. Nikru Chayim, they're referred to as alive. Shenemar. And the Gemara is now going to quote a Pasuk that proves this point. Ubenayu v'nyo yadam ben ish chai rav pa'alim mikabtzel hui kashnei ariel mo'av v'hu yarad v'hika asari besoch habur biyom ha-shalem. So the Pasuk in Shmuel is describing Binayahu ben Yehoyada, and the Gemara now is going to be darshing the Pasuk in its entirety. We turn to the top of the Amud Beis, Ben Ishchai. So he's described as a Ben Ishchai to Kulei Amma B'nei Meisenin. What does that mean? He's a Ben Ishchai. The rest of the world is B'nei Meisen. Ela Ben Ishchai, Shafilu Ben Yisrasa, Kari Chai. That means to say that even after the dead, he's a tzaddik, and therefore he's referred to as a chai. Rav pa'alim may be kabet sa'el, shiriba v'kibet po'olim l'Torah. So this Benayahu, so he assembled a lot of people in order to teach Torah. V'ikah shnei Ariel ma'av, the Pasuk says that he hit the two Ariel, shalonich kemoso, lo b'mikdash rishon, lo b'mikdash sheni. Nobody was like Benayahu, not during the first base of Mikdash, second base of Mikdash. Ariel, over here, the Ari is a lion, but it's understood, B'derech HaDrush, that's referring to the base of Mikdash. And the Shnei Ariel is referring to the two Batei Mikdash, the first and the second. The Pasuk goes on, V'hu Yarad V'hikas Ari B'zoch HaBor B'yom HaShaleg. He went ahead and he hit the Ari in a day of snow. Igad Army. There are two ways to explain this. One, the Army, the Tavik Zizeg, the Bar de Benachas V'tavo. One is that Benayahu dug a hole in the snow, meaning a dug a hole in the ice in order so that he can tovel, even though the water was ice cold. Igadami, another pshad, is the Taber Gzize de Barda, I'm sorry. Igadami, another pshat, is the Tana Sifra, the Bei Rav B'Yuma de Sisva, that he learned the entire Sifra. Sifra is the Medrash on Sefer Vayikra, and he learned it on a winter's day. Tosus points out over here what's so special about learning the Sifra on Sefer Vayikra. So Tosus says it is the most difficult of the Sifrei Halacha. So what we have just proven is that a mace is aware of what's going on over here, even after the mace is dead. As long as he was a tzaddik, is referred to as a chai, and so therefore the understanding is that he has knowledge of what goes on in this world. The Gemara points out, "V'ameis amena yod me'uma." So now we have to go back to the previous pasuk, because there was a pasuk cited that indicates that the mace doesn't know what's going on. The pasuk says, "V'ameis amena yod me'uma." So the Gemara now gives pshat in that pasuk. Ela rishayim shebechayim kurim meisim. That's a reference to a rasha. Rasha, even while he's alive in this world, is described as a mace. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "V'ata chalal rasha nasi Yisrael." This is a reference to Tzidkiyahu HaMelech. Tzidkiyahu HaMelech was the last king of the first base of Mikdash, and he's described as a Rasha Nisi Yisrael. He was wicked, and he's described as a halal. A halal over here literally refers to somebody as halal, but the understanding is that even while he's alive, so he is considered like a mace. Or another pshad, so with two or three witnesses, the dead person is going to die. So chayhu, what do you mean he's going to die? He's still alive. So why is he described as hames? Ella, hames meikara. It means to say that because he was an avarian, because he's subject to capital punishment, so even at this stage, he's referred to as a mace. So two psukim that speak to this idea that a rasha, even in this world, is considered a mace. The Gemara continues, Beni Rabbi Chiya, Nafik Likriyasa. So the sons of Rabbi Chiya went out to the field, Iyakar Le Tamudaihu. And what they were doing is that they were forgetting their learning. Iyakar, says Rashi, comes from the word heavy, meaning that they're trying to learn, but they're just having difficulty remembering the learning. And they tried very hard to remember the learning. One says to his friend, Yada Avon Bahai Tzara, do you think our father knows the pain that we're going through? The other one says, Minayada, what do you mean? He doesn't know what's going on, he's dead. The pasuk says that he does not know what his sons are going through. The other one says to him, "V'lo yada." What do you mean he doesn't know? Of course he knows. V'aksiv, the pasuk says, "Ach b'saro alav yichav, v'nasho alav te'avel." The Gemara, the pasuk in Iyov, which now the Gemara explains, "V'amar av Yitzchak kasha rima lemeis," when the person is dead and buried and suffering the decomposition of the body and the worms are going through the mace, so it's kemacha bebasar chai. It's like needles being stuck into the flesh of somebody who's alive, meaning he feels the pain. So Amri, so they said, okay, that's true, but that pasuk does not indicate that they know what's going on in total. Bitzar didu yada, they may know what's going on in terms of their own body. Bitzar d'achrin lo yada, but they may not be going know what the pain is suffered by other people. Velo, the Vatayan, the Gemara now is going to point out that we seem to have a brisa that is going to be an extraordinarily clear indication that a mace does in fact know not only what goes on with their own personal conditions, but they know what's going on outside of themselves as well. And the Gemara is going to be quoting a brisa from Avos to Rabbi Nassan. This is going to be a lengthy brisa that seems to clearly indicate that the mace knows what's going on in this world. There was a story with a tzaddik, a chassid, it was a year of famine, and the small amount of money that he had, he gave it to an ani on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Viknitu ishto, his wife was very upset, and they got into a fight. The fight was so bad that he had to sleep in the cemetery that night. While in the cemetery that night, he heard two neshamas that were speaking to one another. They were neshamas of women. Amar Chad al Chavert, one said to the other, so let us float around in the Olam HaEmes, and we're going to listen right behind the Pargod. Pargod is a curtain separating the Makom of the Shechina from the rest of the Olam HaEmes. And so we'll just stand right by the curtain and we'll listen in, and we'll hear what kind of calamities are going to befall the world. Amar la Chaverta, so the other woman said, I can't do it because I'm buried in a mat of reeds. Now, I'm not exactly sure what this means, and certainly not in a position to explain how it is that because she's buried in a machzel shakanim, that she can't float around, but whatever, for whatever reason, she can't. So one woman can, the other woman can't. So what I'll say to you is as follows. You'll go, and whatever you hear, you'll tell me. Halchehi v'shata. So she goes ahead and she floats. Uvava amar la. And she comes back and she tells her friend, Chaverta, Chaverti. Mashama me'achorei parga. What did you hear from right behind the curtain? Amar la. She says to her, Shemata shekol hazorei b'reviya rishona, barad malke uso. Anyone who plants during the first reviya, so the hail will hit it. And Rashi points out over here, as we learned in the Gemara and Tanis, as we will learn together in the Gemara and Tanis, so there are three reviyas. There are three basic rain seasons that come annually. You take a look at Rashi towards the top, Yoreh, Shalosh Reviyah, saying there are three periods of rain. Bechirah Shniya Shlishi, the first, the second, and the third. The first one, Rashi says, starts on the 17th day of Mar Cheshvan. Second one starts on the 23rd day of Mar Cheshvan. And the third one starts on the first day of Kislev. So anyone planting from the 17th to the 23rd, so that is going to be bad because hail is planning to come at that time, at that point in time. Halachu. So now this person who slept in the cemetery that night, so now he had inside information about what's going to be of the future season. So Vizar Berevishnia. So he didn't plant in the first Revia, but he planted in the second Revia with this insider information that he received. Shakola Olam Kulo Laka Shalola Laka. And everybody else's field was hit by the hail. His, of course, was not. And so therefore he had a bumper crop that year that nobody else had. And so therefore he was able to make a profit that year. L'shana Acheres, now the next year, Halach Balam Bebeis HaKfar. So he went out to the cemetery. Didn't even need to have a fight with his wife. He just went right out to the cemetery. V'shama Osan Sheiruchos Shemesapra Zuhim Zuh. And again, he heard the spirits of these two women speaking to one another. Amrachad al-Chaverta bo v'neshub ba'olam v'nishma me'achorei apargon. Ma pranas ba'la olam. So again, conversation comes out to be the same. Let's go and float right behind the pargod, and we'll listen in. Didn't I tell you? I can't go because I'm buried in the reeds. You'll go. And whatever you hear, you'll report back to me. And after floating around, she comes back and she reports. What did you hear? So in this season, if you plant in the second Revia, so you're going to be hit by Shidafon. It's a wind blast, and the crops will be adversely affected. Halach Vizara B'Revia Rishona. So what he did is he planted in the first Revia. Shakola Olam Kulo Nishdaf Vishalo Lo Nishdaf. So that means that everyone else's was hit by this wind blast, and his was not. Amrlo Ishto Mibne Ma Ishtake Shakola Olam Kulo Laka Vishalchala Laka. And so his wife said to him, you know, it's amazing. Last year you knew exactly when to plant. This year you knew exactly when to plant. And how can that be? So Sachla called Varm Halalo. So he told his wife exactly what happened. He was at the cemetery and he overheard the Rucho speaking to one another. Amru lo hayu yamim muatim ad shenafla ketata ben ishto shel oso chasid uben ima shel oso riba. And so a little bit later, so there was a fight between the wife of the chassid and the mother of the young woman who died. Meaning, of the two women who died, one of them was a very young woman. And so now a fight subsequently ensued between the wife of the chassid and the mother of one of these girls. And in the middle of the fight, so she reported, hey, I got some information regarding your daughter. Your daughter is buried in a mat of reeds. And as a result of that, she can't float around. Now the next year, this is the third year, so once again he's in the Beis HaKfaros and he's listening to them having a conversation. And so for a third consecutive year, so the suggestion of let's go float to the Pargud and let's listen in. And so the other one said, no, I don't think it's a good idea, because everything that I report to you is heard by the Chaim, heard by those people who are alive. And so, Ad Kan Divrei Avos the Rebbe Nasan, and the Gemara now notes, Alma Yodeh. It's clear that they know what's going on in this world. So the Gemara says, not necessarily, Doma Inishach, Rinishach, Va'azova Amalahu. What could have happened is that during the interim, between years number 2 and 3, somebody else died and told them and informed them what happened in this world. So the story does not necessarily prove that the Mesim know what's going on in this world. Tashma, the Gemara comes and brings another proof. So Ziri would deposit his money and leave it by his innkeeper. He trusted his innkeeper, and so therefore he entrusted that he gave her the money, and she would just simply put it in a safe, in some sort of safe. Ada Asiva Azil, Lebe Rav, and he's going to go off to yeshiva when he comes back from the yeshiva, so he'll just collect his money from the safe. Shchiva. However, before he was able to return, she died, and so therefore she kept it in a safe place, but she didn't tell anybody where that safe was. And so Azal Basra Chatzer Mavis. So he went to the cemetery. So Amar La Zuzehecha Amra. Zuzehecha. And so now he goes to the cemetery and he's talking to her Ruach. And he asks, where's the money? Amar La. So she says back to him, Zil Shaklinim Bitusei Bitsinur Dadasha. Where you're going to find it is in the hole right by the door. The doors back then, so they had pegs, and the pegs went into the threshold of the house. And that's what's referred to as the Tzinur Dadasha. And she says, that's where I hid the money. So, Bidoch Plan. And she explained exactly where to find it. The Ema La, Le'ima Tishadoli, Misarke V'guvtaha, De Kuchla V'hadei, Paniyasa De Asilamacha. And she says, and look, as long as we're conversing, so do me a favor. Could you please tell so-and-so to go get my comb and a tube of some sort of makeup? And because this particular woman is going to die in the very near future. And so have her bring it to me. Now, as if I totally understood what that meant. But anyway, from the story, it's clear that she has full awareness of what's going on in this world. And she even knows what's going to happen in the future. And she knows that somebody's going to die. Amal Yadeh. And again, the Gemara points out from this story, it seems very clear that the Mesim know what's going on in this world. Dilma, so the Gemara says, no, that's not necessarily proof as well. Because perhaps, Duma Kadivim Umachriz La. There could be that there was a malach who made this announcement in Shemayim. So it's not that she knew what was going on in this world, but she heard the malach up in Shemayim who announced that this person is going to die in the near future. So we don't have absolute proof that the Mesim know what's going on in this world. Tashma, the Gemara brings another proof. So the father of Shmuel was entrusted to hold on to the money of the orphans. Kinach nafshei. He was collecting money for the orphans anyway. Avud Shmuel died. So kinach nafshei lo have Shmuel gabe. Shmuel was not there at the time of his death. Have a kakarele bar achazuzu diasme. Now there was a lot of money that was collected for the Yisrael, and Shmuel did not know where the money was held, and people were saying that Shmuel himself was consuming the money. He must have pilfered the account, the orphan's account, and so rumor circulated. Azo abasrei lechatzamavis. So once again, Shmuel went to the cemetery. Amar lahu, and he conversed with his father. Be'ine Abba. So Be'ine Abba. And so in the cemetery, he says, I need to speak to my father. Amar lahu. So they said to him, Abba tuva ikahacha. What do you mean? A lot of fathers in the cemetery. Amar lahu be'ine Abba bar Abba. Well, I need to speak to my father, who's the son of his father. Amar lahu, Abba bar Abba, nami tuva ika. Well, that describes a lot of people that are buried over here. Hach amar lahu be'ine Abba bar Abba, avu ad Shmuel. And so therefore, he says, I need to speak to the father of Shmuel. So Hecha. So he says, where is he? Amar lahu, Salk lemesifta derikia. So where can I find him? He's going to need Yeshiva Shamala. Adahach ichazi lelevi, the Yasef Abrai. And so now when Avu Adishmol goes up to the Yeshiva Shamala, so they find that Levi is sitting outside of the Yeshiva Shamala. Amar lahu, Amai Yisavta Abrai. And so Avu Adishmol asks Levi, so why are you sitting outside the Yeshiva Shamala? My time lo salakta. How come you don't go into the Yeshiva Shamala? So Amar Lei, so he explains to him, the Amar Lei, well, they explained to me, Kol ki hanach shini de lo salita l'masifta de Rabbi Afas, because during your lifetime, Levi, you had the opportunity to go to the yeshiva of Rabbi Afas, and you never went. Va'ach lishe l'dayte. And Rabbi Afas felt terrible about it, and because you caused concern and anxiety to Rabbi Afas, so therefore you are not allowed entrance into the yeshiva Shamala. Lo ma'ilina lach l'mesifta derikia, and that's why you're not allowed into yeshiva shamala. Adahachi v'hachi asi avu echazi dehavika bachi v'achich. And now, as Shmuel is speaking to his father, he sees that his father is both crying and laughing. Amalei my time kabachis. So Shmuel asks his father, why are you crying? Amalei de la agol ka'asis, because I know you're coming in a short amount of time. My time achichta. Okay, so that explains why you're crying, but why are you laughing? The chashiv de b'hai amatuva. So Avu Shmuel explains to his son, well, because I know that you have high stature here in this world. So when you come to the Olam HaEmes, I know that you will be coming with a lot of stature. So Amar Lei, Ich Hashiv Na'ai Le'Levi. So Shmuel says to his father, okay, good. So I have a lot of status up in the Olam Shel Emes. So based on my stature, I'm making a request that Levi should be allowed entrance into the Yeshiva Shel Mala. Va'ailihu l'Levi. So based on Shmuel's request, so therefore Levi was allowed entrance into the Yeshiva Shel Mala. Amalei Zuz Diyas Mehecha, while he's still conversing with his father, so he says, okay, now where is the money of the orphans? Amalei Zil Shaklinu Be'amta Derechaya. So go to the millstone. If you go to the base of the millstone, you're going to find the money there. Now, money was piled in three separate piles, one on top of another, on top of another. Elai v'tasai didan, the money that's on the top and the bottom belongs to us. Umitzia diasme, the middle pile is the one that belongs to the orphan. Amarle my time avarahachi. So Shmuel asks his father, why did you configure it in that manner? Amarle I genuve ganve, mignavu mididan. So if somebody comes along and steals it, so they're going to take the top pile, which is our money, and that doesn't bother me. And I achla ara achla mididan. And if the money sinks into the ground, so that's the bottom pile, and that's our money, and again, that doesn't bother me. So basically, I did this so that the money of the orphans will be protected. Amadiade. In this conversation that takes place between Shmuel, who was alive, and Avud Shmuel, who was dead, so you see that Avud Shmuel knew what was going on in this world. The Gemara, again, deflects as well. Dilma shani Shmuel kevin dechashiv kadme umechaze panumakum. And so the Gemara says, not necessarily. It could very well be that Shmuel's imminent death was announced up in the Yeshiva Shamala, and he knew only because of the announcement that was made up in the Yeshiva Shamala. Comes down now from these stories that it seems pretty clear, although the Gemara deflected all these proofs, but it seems pretty clear that the Mesim know what goes on in this world. The Afra of Yonasan Hadarbe. Now Rav Yonasan, who in the beginning of this sugya was resistant to this idea that the Mesim know what's going on in this world, even Rav Yonasan changed his mind. How do I know that Mesim have conversations one with another? The pasuk says, "Zos haaretz asher nishbati l'Abraham, liYitzchak uliYaakov leMor." The Gemara quotes the pasuk from the end of Sefer Devarim, and they end the word leMor. So that's a curious word. My leMor. What does that mean? I'm a Kadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe, leChamor lehem laAbraham liYitzchak Yaakov shvush nishbati lehem kvar kiyamtem livneichem. So the leMor is, I want you, Moshe, to tell Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that the shvuah that I promised them, that these children were going to get the Eretz Yisrael, so I was mekayim that shvuah. So the Isa Gedachas, now we turn to the top of your testament, Alev, Delo Yadda, Ki Amar Lehu, my Havi. So the Gemara says, so if you think they don't know, so then when he informs them, so what? So Elamai, the Adis, so the Gemara says, okay, so they know. So Lama Lelemeimar, Lehu. So then why was it necessary for Moshe to tell them? If they already knew, so then Moshe informing them is not information. They already knew this. So the Gemara's explanation is, Lachzuke le tuvuzel Moshe. Because not only are they going to be informed by Moshe, but they also know to give Moshe Yeshakoach. In other words, Moshe is going to receive the credit. And so that's why Moshe had to tell them. But the truth of the matter is that they knew already. Comes out now from this very long sugya. The Gemara's conclusion is that the Mason do in fact know what's going on in this world, even after their demise. Let's quickly recap the daf. We started the third parak of the Masechta. We talked about people who are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Shema. The Onen is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Shema. We broke it down into three separate exemptions. One, the one who is responsible for bearing his karov, so he's going to have an exemption. Two, the one who's doing Shmira. And three, somebody who's in within proximity of a mace. So those three people are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Shema. We also discussed in the course of this daf that if you're moving at someone from one place to another, so you are not allowed to wrap them up and sit on top of them, but rather they have to be treated with kavod, unless you're worried about their safekeeping. Then you can wrap them up and sit on top of them when you're transporting them from one location to another. And the Gemara says the same thing is true regarding a Sefer Torah. And when you see a mace being escorted to his burial, so you must go ahead and escort along with him. That is a mitzvah. And then finally, the last thing that we discuss in the course of today's daf is what is the mace aware of in this world? And the Gemara's conclusion is that the mace is fully aware of that which goes on in this world.